So Hebrews chapter 4, from verse 14. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. For every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. So also, Christ did not exalt himself to be made a high priest, but was appointed by him who said to him, "You are my son, today I have begotten you." As he says also in another place, "You are a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek." In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Well, we're going to think about those verses in some detail together. And as we begin, I wanted to start with a question that I think if you're here as a Christian today, I'd imagine it's a question that you will have asked before in your Christian life. How can I keep going to the end? How can I make it to the finish line of the Christian life and enter into life forever with God? In a sense, in Hebrews, we've already had the answer to that question, actually, in chapters 1-4. Essentially, the answer is that we need to keep listening to Jesus. That was what we saw in chapters 1-4. Chapter 2, verse 1 probably says that more clearly than anywhere else in those chapters. So just as the author has given this huge portrait of Jesus as the one who's enthroned over all things, the one who created all things, he gives this encouragement, this exhortation to those who are reading this letter. Chapter 2, verse 1. Therefore, we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard, lest we drift away from it. And they need to listen carefully to what God has spoken in his son, Jesus. Because the people who keep listening to Jesus, they are the people who keep going to the end. To use the language of that verse, they're the people who don't drift away. So we need to keep listening to Jesus. In a sense, that's the answer. But is that really enough? You know, maybe we get that we need to keep listening, but are we actually able to do that? Our experience might tell us that we aren't able to keep listening and to keep going. Maybe we find ourselves asking, will the temptations get too much for me in the Christian life? I think I felt that a bit in the last few years with lots of stories in Christian media, on websites and YouTube channels and things like that about Christian leaders who failed in particular ways, sometimes in abuses of power or in sexual misconduct, and have in some cases fallen away completely. And in many cases, those stories are quite unsettling, I find. And it makes you think, you know, could that happen to me? Could I find myself in that same place? Will the temptations get too much for me? Or will the hardships of the Christian life get too much for me? Maybe some of you know about the Open Doors websites, where you can learn about the way that different Christians in different countries are persecuted for their faith. And just to give one example, Christians in Libya face all sorts of hardships for their faith. So for example, you could face house arrest or abduction or different forms of violence, even murder, because you're a Christian. And we're very fortunate in our country, aren't we? That isn't the kind of thing that we experience at the moment as Christians. But who knows what the next 10, 20, 30 years could hold for Christians. Maybe things will get worse. Maybe things will get harder like they are in Libya. And I think it makes me ask, at least, would I keep going if that was what things became like in England? Would I keep going to the end, or would I give in amidst the hardship? So our own experience might tell us that we aren't able to keep listening, aren't able to keep going. But even what we've seen in Hebrews so far might make us think that. So you might remember, if you can think back to January, the last passage we looked at in chapters 3 and 4 of Hebrews was basically this case study of Israel, the first generation who were brought out of Egypt and who were in the wilderness. And they didn't keep listening. They didn't trust God's word. They didn't keep trusting his promises. And so they didn't keep going to the end. They didn't enter into the land that God had promised for them. So maybe even that would make us feel that we can't keep going. We can't keep listening. They didn't. How can we? How can I keep going to the end? We need to keep listening, but are we able to do that? Well, the wonderful news of these verses that we're looking at today is that the answer is a resounding yes. We are able to keep listening. We are able to keep going. And the reason essentially for that is what we've been thinking about in our service so far. It is because we have a high priest, Jesus. Just have a look at chapter 4, verse 14, that first verse on your sheets, in the inside of the service sheets. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession. Now, the idea of having a high priest is probably quite a foreign reality to us, really, isn't it? So, for example, just to illustrate this, I went on the Good Book Company website this week, which is an online book sales retailer website. And I typed in the words Jesus King into the search bar and I pressed search. And I got 310 results for that. So the idea of Jesus being a king, quite a popular thing, written quite a lot about, something Christians know about quite a lot, I guess. But then I tried another search and I typed in the words Jesus priest. And I wonder how many you think I got for that search. Actually, I only got 2 results for searching for that. And actually, in both cases, I clicked on both links and I pressed Control F, typed in priest. And in both cases, it wasn't referring to Jesus as the priest. It was referring to something like, you know, a Roman Catholic high priest, the priest that was interviewed in the making of the book, something like that. So this is a very foreign reality for us, isn't it? It's not something we think about a lot. But I hope today we're going to see that it really is a crucial and a critical reality for us. And that actually it is key to us keeping going as Christians and going to the end. So we're just going to see 2 things today that Jesus, our high priest, can do for us. And you can see them on the inside of your sheets. 2 things. First thing, we have a high priest who can help us. And this is from chapter 4, verses 14 to 16. Jesus, he can give us what we need to keep going, to keep listening to the end. But before we see that Jesus can help, actually, we need to establish that he can sympathize. Because actually, Jesus' ability to help only really means something, doesn't it, if Jesus feels for us, has compassion for us, and so wants to help us. And so before we think about the fact that he can help, we're going to think about the fact that he can sympathize. So I've put on your sheets there this background point to this point, Jesus can sympathize. And in this sense, Jesus, he fits the high priestly profile, the description of high priests in the Old Testament that we get in these verses in chapter 5, verses 1 to 4. So those high priests in the Old Testament, they could sympathize. So just have a look at chapter 5, verse 2. This is describing those Old Testament high priests. He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward. They could show compassion, pity for those that they were ministering to as the high priests in the Old Testament. And the reason for that you get in the rest of the verse. So he can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward since he himself is beset with weakness. Like the people, he was human. He shared in their weaknesses, and so he knew their temptations, and so he could sympathize with them. To me, I think of, when thinking about this, something like an older sibling. You know, someone who can, when you go to them with some kind of struggle or difficulty in your life, they show you sympathy, maybe unlike your parents, perhaps. And the reason that they can show you sympathy is because they're like you. They faced maybe the same struggles you have, maybe just a couple of years earlier when they were your age, in a way that your parents wouldn't be able to. So they can sympathize. They show sympathy because they're like you. And it's like that with these high priests in the Old Testament. And actually, wonderfully, it's also like that, in one sense, with Jesus. Jesus can sympathize. So just have a look at chapter 4, verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses. It's put as a bit of a double negative in those verses, isn't it? But essentially it's saying that we have a high priest who is able to sympathize with our weaknesses. He can show us compassion. He can feel pity for us in our weakness. And again, you get the reason in the rest of that verse. Chapter 4, verse 15. We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are. Jesus, he took on human flesh, didn't he? He entered into our frailty and our condition. And so he is like us in that sense. He knows our temptations. And actually, in one sense, he knows them worse than us, doesn't he? Just think of the lead up to Jesus' murder, the injustice of his trial, the abandonment he experienced from his friends, Peter and the other disciples leaving him, the mockery he faced from the crowds, and even being hung on a Roman cross. It was awful, the sorts of things Jesus faced, wasn't it? He knows our temptations. And actually, in itself, that makes a real difference to prayer, I think, doesn't it? I don't know about you, but I think if I were a member of another religion and I was having to pray to a different God, I think I'd find there a barrier in place, in a sense, because these other gods, they don't know what it's like. They don't know the experience of being human. It would feel like there was this barrier in place. They don't know what it's like. They're not approachable in that way. But wonderfully, with Jesus, we needn't find that, because he does know what it's like. He's experienced the human life, even at its worst. And so he's approachable. Jesus can sympathize. But wonderfully, Jesus doesn't only fit that high priestly profile that we see in chapter 5, 1 to 4. Actually, he surpasses it. And not only does he feel for us and so want to help us, actually he can and is able to help us. So that's what we're going to move on to now. This main thing really under this point, that Jesus can help us. Just have a look at chapter 4, verse 16. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. When the temptations of the Christian life, when the hardships of the Christian life just feel too much, actually Jesus can give us what we need to keep going to the end. And I think the reason for that actually is kind of tucked into the verse before. We didn't actually finish reading chapter 4, verse 15, did we? So let me read it fully this time. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Actually, this is a point of contrast with the high priests under the old in the Old Testament, because actually, as we learn in chapter 5, verse 3, they had to offer sacrifice for their own sins because they were sinners just like the people. But Jesus was different to that. He was without sin. He overcame temptation in every instance that it faced him. Again, just think about the injustice of his trial, the abandonment he faced from his friends, the mockery from the crowd, the execution on a Roman cross. In all of that, he didn't give up. He didn't sin, but he kept going to the end. I guess often people seek, don't they, help from those who are successful in their field. So maybe you've heard of Stephen Bartlett. He's quite a well-known, popular young entrepreneur at the moment. And Naomi and I sometimes on a Sunday evening to relax, watch a little bit of his vlog, which is called Behind the Diary. It's quite good fun if you want to check it out. But the impression you get on this vlog is that he really is the person to go to if you want to reach success in your business career. So after these talks he does at Canary Wharf and other places, lots of people come up to him and they want to speak to him and talk with him. And I guess the reason for that is because he's one who's made it. So he's one of the dragons on Dragon's Den. He's got chart-topping podcast, best-selling author. He's made it. And so I guess he can give them what they need to reach success. Maybe the financial investment in their company, or maybe a role in one of Stephen's businesses. And in a sense, Jesus is like that. But he is the person to go to, and not for reaching success in your business career, actually something much, much more significant than that. He is the person to go to keep going to the end, to enter into life forever with the God who made us. And the reason he is the person to go to is because he has made it. He overcame temptation. He kept going to the end. And so he can give us what we need to keep going. And so actually, when we find ourselves asking, you know, will the temptations of the Christian life just get too much for me? Well, the great news of these verses is they needn't get too much for us. If we draw near to Jesus, if we pray to him, he can give us what we need to keep going. Just thinking of those leaders, many of them who've Christian leaders who've failed and fallen away, even in some cases. It does make you think, doesn't it? How much were they praying? How much were they drawing near to Jesus, seeking the help that he can give to keep going to the end? It's worth asking ourselves, isn't it? In those moments of temptation, how much is our first instinct to pray, to draw near to Jesus? I don't know about you, I think my instinct is often to grumble about the temptation in that moment, or even just to give in to the temptation. But actually, these verses help us to see that there is a better instinct, isn't there, to draw near to Jesus. He can give us what we need in those moments to keep going, to press on to the end. That's the first thing. We have a high priest who can help us. Here's the second thing Jesus can do for us on your sheets. We have a high priest who can save us. And this is from chapter 5 and verses 5 to 10. He can raise us from the dead to life forever with God. And again, as we did with the last point, we're going to need to get some background in place before we see that foreground point of Jesus being able to save us. So firstly, under the background point there, I've put Jesus is appointed. And again, this is a part where Jesus fits with the high priestly profile that we get in chapter 5, 1 to 4, this description of the high priests in the Old Testament, because they too were appointed. And you can see that actually at either end of verses 1 to 4 of chapter 5, sort of bookends these verses. So at the beginning, chapter 5, verse 1, for every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God. So just notice the verbs there. They were chosen, they were appointed. Similar thing at the end of those verses, chapter 5, verse 4. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. I've got an app on my phone that I quite like, a football kind of news app called FotMob. I don't know if any other football fans in the room happen to make use of this app. But one thing I really like about it is the way that half an hour before one of the matches begins, you get the lineups sort of notifying you on your phone. So you get to see the 11 players who've been chosen for one team and the 11 players who've been chosen and selected for the other team. And if half an hour later, as I go down to the pub maybe to watch this match, and I see that completely different players than the ones who were selected are on the pitch, it would be a complete surprise. And I'd be thinking, you know, what's going on? These aren't the players who were chosen. Because you have to be chosen to play, don't you? I guess that's true in lots of sports. Not just anyone can walk onto the pitch. You need to be the ones that the manager has selected. And it's like that with these high priests. You know, not just anyone can stroll into the tabernacle. You have to be the ones chosen by God, appointed by him. And in a similar way, Jesus too was appointed, chosen to be a high priest. So let me just read chapter 5, verses 5 to 6. So also Christ did not exalt himself to be made a high priest, but was appointed by him who said to him, you are my son, today I have begotten you. As he says also in another place, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. So just like these high priests who came before, Jesus too was chosen. He didn't exalt himself, but was called by God. And you can see that in sort of two roles, really, in these verses. He was appointed by him who said to him, you are my son, today I have begotten you. That's a quote from Psalm 2. Actually, we've had that psalm already in the book of Hebrews. And it's the way that Jesus is appointed as king. But actually, what we add to that in these verses is Jesus' appointment as priest. And for that, the author, he quotes from Psalm 110 in verse 6. You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Jesus was appointed as high priest. But again, we get to see that not only does Jesus fit the high priestly profile, actually he surpasses it. He goes beyond it. Because actually Jesus, he was appointed in a very different way to those high priests who went before. Actually a way that results in our salvation. So we're going to move on to the foreground part of this point now. Jesus can save us. Let me read verses 7 to 10 of chapter 5. In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. In some ways, these verses recap what we've already seen in this passage. We see that Jesus knows our temptations, the way it talks about his loud cries and tears in the face of his suffering and death. Actually, it sounds like that passage that we had read earlier by Tom, didn't we? That Tom read for us, where we heard Jesus praying in the garden, his agonizing prayer as he went to his death. He knows our temptations, but also that he overcame our temptations, that in the midst of his suffering, going to his death, he showed reverence, you get in verse 7, obedience, verse 8. He overcame the temptation. So we sort of recap what we've seen in these verses, but we definitely expand on them. We see something new here, because we see too that Jesus, he was saved from death. Let me just reach up to 5 verse 7 again. In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death. And here's the key words, and he was heard. In other words, Jesus' prayer to be saved from death was a prayer that God listened to and answered, and he raised him from the dead. It's what we were thinking about last weekend, isn't it? The Easter message that Jesus was raised. And actually, that is the way that he was appointed as high priest. In his resurrection and ascension to God's right hand, he became this priest after the order of Melchizedek. He was saved from death. And so these verses say that means he can save others from death as well. Let me read verses 9 and 10 again. And being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. So he, having been saved himself, now he can be the source of salvation for others as well. So actually, this means that it's not only that Jesus can do something for us in the middle of our Christian lives, as we saw in the first point, he overcame temptation, and so he can help us in time of need. Actually, also, Jesus can do something for us at the end of our Christian lives. He can raise us from death, be the source of eternal salvation as the one who himself was saved from death. And so in those moments when we find ourselves asking, will the hardships of the Christian life get too much for me? You know, if our country became like Libya and the sorts of things Christians were experiencing were house arrest and abduction and violence and murder for their faith, would the hardships be too much? Well, if Jesus can't save us, if he can't raise us, then of course the hardships would get too much, wouldn't they? Of course they cause us to give up. But the wonderful news of these verses is that Jesus can save us. He can raise us to new life. And so the hardships, they needn't get too much for us. I remember back in August last year, we had our summer fellowship series, as we always do. And we were thinking about missionary pioneers of the last kind of 100 years or so. And one of the figures that we looked at was Elizabeth Elliot, who was an American missionary. And in her case, the hardship certainly didn't cause her to give up. So in part of her missionary career, she was serving a tribe in Ecuador with her husband and some other missionaries. And there was a horrible day where basically her husband and a couple other of these missionaries were killed by this tribe. And yet in that moment, not only was she not caused to give up, she even stayed amidst this tribe, amidst the danger, to serve these people and keep being with them. The hardships didn't cause her to give up. And I guess the reason for that is because she really knew that Jesus could save her, that Jesus could raise her from death. You know, even if this tribe went on to kill her too, she knew that her hardships needn't get too much for her. We have a high priest who can save us. Well, we started by thinking, didn't we, how can I keep going to the end? Often we think maybe that we aren't able to keep going to the end, don't we? Maybe we feel the temptations will get too much, the hardships will get too much. But the wonderful news of this passage is that we really are able to keep going. We really are able to get to the end because we have a high priest, because we have Jesus, a high priest who can help us in the middle of the Christian life. He overcame temptation, and so he can give us what we need to keep going to the end. The temptations needn't get too much for us. And we have a high priest who can save us at the end of the Christian life. He has been raised, and so he can raise us from the dead to life forever with God. And so the hardships, they needn't get too much for us. They needn't cause us to give up. Just as we close, let me read those words from chapter 4, verse 14 again. Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. Well, we're going to have a moment of pause just to dwell on what the Lord's been saying to us through this passage, and then we'll be led in prayer.